I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Kemi Sharia.
And I'm Monica Ainley. And you're listening to Fashion No Filter,
where we sit down with some of the lead creatives, strategic thinkers, and emerging talent around us to interpret the ins and outs of the fashion industry today.
And we're back with episode 2 of season 2.
Long live season 2. We told you we'd come back. So we all know that Instagram is very addictive in the first place. But as Eva reminded us last week, the team over at Instagram and Facebook are constantly developing new ways to improve functionality of these apps to make them more attractive to individuals and businesses. And in short, basically, keep us scrolling as long as possible.
So Kemi, being the super grammar that she is even apparently having a new function tested on her.
Yeah, I haven't seen that, but yeah.
Well, this is what Eva was saying, that you can now find out exactly how many hours you are on Instagram a day, which is actually quite helpful.
I definitely don't want to know.
Yeah, I mean, what is it?
How many hours today? I don't. Thank God I can't use my phone in the recording studio, so I don't have to.
Airplane mode,
exactly.
This is our detox. Well, I guess we would all like to think that we're in control, but I have to say sometimes the temptation to share ever-increasing amounts about one's life on a regular basis can be totally overwhelming.
Yeah, I think also there's temptation to show your life through a very rose-tinted filter and therefore make everything just look very sweet and fun and
but
amazing.
But of course, nobody wants to air their dirty laundry in public. I mean, some people do, but most people want to make their share the happy stuff and, you know, make themselves look good. We pick photos that show the good times, happy moments, thrilling travels, well-curated outfits mixed in with a smattering of artistic cultural stimuli. And of course, our best personal angles, which we know because we're on Instagram all the time. It is logical.
Yeah, but what happens when the need to paint your life in a different light than reality takes over your life? Well, joining us today is the journalist, consultant, and newly published author of Why Social Media is Ruining Your Life, our friend Catherine Ormerod.
We are thrilled to have Catherine on the pod. I know I've admired her point of view since she first brought it to us in the industry over a decade ago through her writing for Grazia UK, Glamour, Matches, The Independent, and The Sunday Times Style. Today, her website, Work, 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 is the go-to anti-perfectionist platform for our generation, where well-known members of the fashion and media industries present no BS uncensored versions of their working experiences.
Yeah, instead of pretending like everything comes to them without trying, as is so often the case in today's perfectionist me online filtered culture.
Yeah, it's super refreshing.
Yeah, it's a breath of fresh air. Check it out.
So Catherine's book takes on just this. Why Social Media is Ruining Your Life tackles head-on the pressure of the unattainable perfection we see all around us on a constant basis via social media.
If you prefer the Instagram version of yourself, read this book, writes Rachel Thompson in Mashable.
This book is a call to arms from the eye of the storm, writes Emma Gannon, author of The Multi-Hyphen Method.
And friend of the pod, Pandora Sykes, meanwhile called the work a vital manual which will help you navigate social media and turn it into not a weapon, but a useful tool.
And now for an extract read by the author herself.
Does social media make you better or worse at your job? Apparently, it's a contested question, but I think we all know the answer. Let's create the scenario. You get into work on a Monday morning, all fired up and ready to go, with a mental to-do list playing through your mind. You nail the must-respond emails, and as a reward, have a quick check on your phone to see if anyone has messaged you. You see your family WhatsApp has accrued 31 messages, so you decide you better catch up now or you'll be lost forever in the thread. While you're doing that, a push notification comes through from Instagram telling you that an old school friend has commented on that gym pic you posted from class this morning. You immediately respond. You also see you've had 7 new emails and 2 texts. Mentally, you add them to your to-do list, as they're much more interesting than the work you've got to do. So you approach them first. After all, you did nail those emails already this morning. Approximately 22 minutes later, you return to your work, which just doesn't feel quite so satisfying anymore. But you exert some discipline and focus. You realise you have 19 windows open on your desktop. 7 minutes later, you hear your phone ping, and somehow it's back in your hand again. You put it down and try to recapture your train of thought. What is it that you were writing again? Maybe it's on one of those tabs. No, that's not it. But now you can definitely tell your friend Holly that she should buy that dress. Ugh, back to work. The cycle continues torturously until lunchtime when, thank the Lord, you can scroll without the guilt as you walk and text to the closest prat. You reach the end of the day, and while you've managed to tick off most of your original to-do list, you've also watched 3 YouTube videos, spent 47 minutes on Instagram, looked at 12 pictures you could add to Instagram, and Googled lots of cool synonyms to help you write a seriously witty caption. Didn't post any of those 12 pictures. Replied to 6 WhatsApp conversations with a total of 54 messages, pretended you were researching a new marketing objective while actually updating your snap streaks, checked your Tinder inbox about 7 times, and also inadvertently bought a pair of Miu Miu-alike shoes from Topshop as you saw they were on sale on Facebook. Oh, and there's a DM from LinkedIn. Maybe it's a new job you need because this one seems really exhausting. The sun sets, you're the last one in the office, and your scattergun brain is frazzled. All you can think of doing is tumbling onto your sofa and ordering a takeaway, while sitting all evening long watching Netflix with your laptop open and your phone twitching relentlessly in your palm. Sound familiar?
Catherine Omrod, it's so great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you from that chilling excerpt of your new book, Why Social Media is Ruining Your Life.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think a few of us can recognise ourselves in that short little...
Yes.
I don't know if it's a few of us. I don't think this is a niche activity. I think it's pretty universal.
Okay, most of us might recognise a chunk of our day there.
Exactly, and I don't think it's an age-based thing or anything like that. I just think, you know, this is how we're all living our lives now.
It's true.
Well, before we get into today, can you take us back a little bit and tell us about your career before... Social media took over.
In the days of old.
In the days of yore. How long have you worked in the fashion industry?
So I started interning when I was 22. I just started my master's degree in the fashion of history, which I have a master's in, which has really been useful in my career. Not anyway. You know, it was useful to me. And on some level, I suppose, at some point. But so I started interning at 22 and I'm now 35. So I've been doing this for 13 years. And in the beginning of my career, things were really different. Although there's always been a digital component to pretty much everything I've done. And I think that that's, I guess, part of a lot of our lives, of that kind of like cross-generation where you've kind of cut your teeth in the old school but had to adapt very quickly to the new world. So I was the first online writer at Matches when it went online. So as soon as it became matchesfashion.com, and I wrote everything. So that's copywriting, all of the product descriptions, marketing copy, all of that kind of stuff. Because it was so, you know, beta at the time, it just
you know, it was just me.
I did that same job elsewhere, yeah. And it was revolutionary.
And I did it for Netta Porter.
It was, and it was like people thought you were like some kind of tech wizard, but you kind of weren't. You were just
our generation.
Yeah, and also you were doing product descriptions. Totally, do you know what I mean? Like it, but anyway, irregardless, that kind of part of that job, I think, carried on with me throughout everything. And I think, you know, I then got a job back at Sunday Times Star, which was still a very kind of traditional job. I was a stylist assistant to different fashion editors for 3 years, 2.5 years. And then I moved on to the features desk. And then I left that job and moved to South Africa. I had a little stint at Glamour magazine out there doing bits and bobs with them. And then came home and started working for a digital fashion forecasting agency. So that was my first like fully digital job. And I did that for about a year and a half. And on a trip to Tel Aviv, I met the fashion director of Grazia, who happened to be looking for a new senior fashion news and features editor. And I got that job. But the job,
that was a bit of a coup.
Yeah, it was
amazing.
It was great. You know, they were looking for someone with a bit of digital experience and who'd done a different type of job. So I guess I'd been traveling for like 18 months setting up this, the fashion department of a trend forecasting agency. So I'd kind of seen fashion from a different perspective. That I'd been doing everything from Basel through to all of the collections and Copenhagen and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So
clever them for spotting that in you.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. So then I did that job for 3 years, and that was like a proper sitting on front rows, doing London, New York, Milan, Paris, you know, every season, writing every week.
For the website or the magazine?
For both. So I looked after all of the fashion content on the website. So that was writing it and editing other people's. And then also writing in the magazine, you know, interviews, but a lot of trend features as well. So it was really multi-paced, I guess, because obviously, you know, when you're working with a designer on an exclusive interview or something, that can be like 3 months in the planning. But equally, I could be working on something on a Monday that's to go to press on a Thursday, or I could be working on something that needs to be up in an hour's time. So it was really interesting kind of seeing, you know, across the board the different kind of lead times that you can have on content. And then I left in the end because I just couldn't deal with earning such little money. And I know that sounds really depressing, but it got to a point where I was living two such different lives. And I got back from a trip from Tokyo. I think I'd been to Tokyo, then straight to New York, and I'd been staying in like ridiculous hotels and business class flights, and I had a really bad toothache. And I came back and I went to the dentist, and I couldn't afford to get the filling. I had to ask my dad for the money.
Yeah, fashion industry paychecks.
No,
fashion,
but it's important paychecks. To talk about this.
It is,
honestly.
So, you know.
Especially for our younger listeners.
Exactly. So from the social media perspective, or whatever anyone was looking from the outside of my career, it just looked like I was living the life. And actually, I was in a house share. You know, I was living paycheck to paycheck, but not even that. I couldn't cover like the month, you know,
I had the exact same experience before I went freelance.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so I was like, okay, I'm not going to lose anything by trying something new, you know.
At this point, were you already using social media? Was this already something that...
Yeah, so my editor at Grazia actually is the reason that I got onto social media as part of my career at all.
And when we say social media, do we mean Instagram?
Instagram. So before that, yes, I was on Facebook.
Yeah.
Like I was on Facebook from the first...
But again, that was more friends and family.
Yeah, but from... we were like, I guess, early adopters the first year that kind of had it. Yeah. I was at university and I was in my final year. So I kind of had nearly my whole education without it, but we got the pass.
That's interesting, because I think I arrived at Edinburgh the year you left.
Yeah.
And I arrived with having had Facebook for 1 year, and I cannot imagine my experience at Edinburgh University
without
having had Facebook, even though it was you know.
Exactly. So
but
only
I probably had it in high school.
Yeah.
When I was in France.
Well, I am older than you.
Oh, but I'm not older than Monica. Monica was the same age.
Yeah, she's saying she went to uni.
But you already had it before uni.
I had it for when you were in.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of you in Canada. Where
oh, don't even. You've seen.
I've seen
for
the
sure.
Facebook.
When
I've
we got it, we really got it.
I think we all did, though. We were so naive with it, weren't we? And, you know, you'd put messages on people's walls that were like, basically gosh. Used it like a wall as a WhatsApp.
Oh, do
like,
you remember the dread? Do you remember the dread of coming back from a party and in the morning knowing that you were going to be tagged in some awful pictures? You were going to have to text your friend and say, please untag me. Rude. Why did you put this up?
I had a BlackBerry up to that point when my editor was like, no, we need someone on the fashion desk to be doing this Instagram shebang. So I started doing it, and I was traveling so much. You know, I was away 2 or 3 times a month on a trip for work. So it really made sense, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And, you know, not that I think... Obviously, at the point, I was still taking pictures of pretty things, but I was so unsophisticated and bad at it. Do you know what I mean? Looking back, it just seems like so quaint and sweet.
And my first picture on Instagram is a picture of my McDonald's lunch. That's
well,
my first
things haven't changed that much, Cam.
I mean, I looked back the other because I was trying to remember, and I said, "How could this be? What your entry?"
All of our listeners are madly scrolling back in their feed right now.
And do you remember how yellow all your
pictures
were?
With the yellow filter.
Those really weird, like, filmic borders that you put on things. Just like anyway.
Because originally they started it to be like a hipstamatic.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a filters thing.
Exactly. It was like you wanted it to look like it was 1971 and, you know, it was just, but it was also like felt more like a game and there was much more innocence to it. Obviously,
not a game.
Things changed.
And so, Facebook's not a game anymore either.
Exactly. But over the past 5 years, obviously it's become like one of the most important things to my career in terms of making money and, you know, building, I guess, my personal brand for everything beyond that. You know, it's your digital CV, it's your digital business card, it's your digital social call card, you know, it's the whole thing all together. So, you know, I guess things have changed so dramatically from that beginning point. And then I guess it was when I left Grazia that it started to become more important and I started to become more professional about it.
But while you were at Grazia, did having your own personal publishing spot with some followers distinguish you in any way?
It was tricky. Like, I think for everyone that was doing that at that point in publishing, it was really difficult because your magazine owned you. They owned any words that you put out there. They owned any pictures that you took with another brand. You know, it was a really funny time because on one hand, obviously, these magazines wanted you to be out there and spreading the word and, you know, doing all of these things which would reflect back on the magazine really well. But equally, it was problematic because, you know, we'd all signed contracts that said that we couldn't work independently with fashion brands. So anyway, I went off actually to set up a small agency to help brands with their digital content. Because I'd been working quite a lot on the kind of advertorial side of things at Grazia, and I really saw that it was a great opportunity. There still is an amazing opportunity for journalists of, you know, every background, because every brand now needs pictures and words. So,
and every person is their own brand,
it seems. Exactly. I guess to an extent. Really, at that point, I still hadn't entirely realised that I could make that side of things my living.
So at what point did you
and do you consider yourself an influencer now?
I'm many things to many people. I think that a lot of us are. Like, I think Emma Gannon's book, you know, the multi-hyphenate, that whole idea of multi-hyphenate career, multi-hyphenate generation, we used to call it like slashies.
That's what Garance Doré wrote an article years ago saying that we were the slasher generation.
Yeah.
I recognise myself in that.
Massively. And, you know, we used to call it a portfolio career, right? So it's really difficult. I basically switch up
how people describe me, how I describe myself, depending on the context of the conversation, because sometimes the fact that I've been a journalist for 13 years isn't relevant, you know? Like, you kind of have to not be precious about it, because in this instance, in whatever context that maybe someone wants you to do, you know, post some pictures, they literally couldn't give two figs that you've had a whole career.
Are you sure about that? Because I actually think that nothing is totally separate. Everything lives on the internet. Yeah, and the fact that you are now a published author, I've been a journalist for important publications for so long, I don't think that anyone's... I mean, you also have lots of Instagram followers, but I don't think that people miss that. I actually think that we're all being looked at as this sort of...
Yeah, I think your followers don't miss it, but I think sometimes you'll work with brands who literally only care about ROI and how many clicks and how many
likes.
That's
true.
And they really...
I don't like them that much, though.
I don't either, but it's like, you know, what you're going to do. Equally, you've got to make your money, and you have to understand, like, for them... I get it from their perspective. Like, they've got people to answer to, and, you know, it's really, really difficult, isn't it? Obviously. But so in those instances, I probably would say, yes, I work as an influencer and I have a website. You know, those are the things that are more relevant to them. You know, I'm an author. I have a book. I'm a mum for most of my life. You know, like, if we're talking about hours spent on any part of my career, it's being a mum. You know, I write articles freelance, I work with brands as a consultant, I take pictures and write words on social media, I have a website where I talk about anti-perfectionism and like women's issues and feminism. Like, it's very... how do you encompass that in a word? You don't really do you?
All right, Cammy, how long have you spent?
Are you going to ask me this every week?
Well, I'm genuinely... quite curious.
Well, you know, I couldn't find the feature that Eva was saying was being tested on my Instagram account, but there is an app called Moment in the App Store that tracks... it runs in the background of your phone and it tracks how many hours you spend on each of the apps, WhatsApp and Instagram, et cetera, et cetera. And I have to admit that I downloaded it and had it on there for about a week and then deleted it because it was too upsetting how long I was spending on all...
Do you remember how much you were averaging on Instagram?
It was too much. It was at least 4 hours, I think.
I've heard worse, though, to be honest.
Yeah, but I don't think Instagram is my worst app. My guilty pleasure is WhatsApp.
I can confirm.
And voice notes.
I can confirm that to be true.
Yeah. Someone said to me once, are you ever not online on WhatsApp? Which I think it's a bit distressing. It's a very teenager, you know, like it's like MSN days when you were always the person.
But you can't go offline on WhatsApp.
Well, when you're not online, it doesn't say.
It's not like you sign into ICQ.
No, but when you open WhatsApp, it says online. You know, when someone is online on WhatsApp, it just says online.
I love the sneaky people that where the ticks don't go blue. When they're reading your message, it stays gray.
Do I have that?
No, no, you don't.
I take it off sometimes when I'm being really dramatic.
Yeah, but I have a lot of friends who do this, and I'm like, wow.
What do you think is the app that you use the most? Is it social media?
It's Instagram.
Instagram, sure. Yeah.
But a lot of it is positive, like I'm getting inspired.
I'm sure you are.
I'd like to say that it's like the newspapers app, but unfortunately...
it's Instagram.
I'm pretty sure it's Instagram.
Okay, let's get back to Catherine then.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So from hearing all of this, you have been using Instagram, obviously, to earn money.
Yes.
And it has helped you further your career in a positive way.
For sure.
So why write this book? Were you not worried that you were kind of, you know, the expression, about to bite the hand that's feeding you?
So firstly, there's a reason it's called Why Social Media is Ruining Your Life. It's not called Social Media is Ruining Your Life, exclamation mark. Because I think that there are two main strands why I think social media is ruining your life. Number one, it's the way we perceive the content on social media. Number two, it's the way we're using it. I don't believe that the technology is inherently negative or nefarious. I think that the way that we as human beings are currently utilizing that technology is really problematic and dangerous. So I'm not dissing what people have built on social media, other people's brands, other people's businesses. It's an incredible facilitator for many, many positive things, including organ transplants, you know, and people can build such meaningful and important relationships through social media. However, in saying that, at the moment, for a lot of people, the negatives are outweighing the positives. It doesn't need to be that way, you know. As soon as we really become mindful and conscious of those issues and the way we are using it and the steps we can take to make things more positive for us and for the community as a whole, things can change.
I mean, I think we should be more specific. When you're looking at someone's feed, what do you think we're getting these negative thoughts from?
Well, there's a statistic that says 7 out of 10 girls under 16 now feel prettier online than they do offline.
Because we're filtering ourselves and putting up the best version
and
of ourselves.
And picking the best.
Yeah.
You take 25 photos and pick one.
Well, you pick 25, then you filter it, then you like...
It's a process, isn't it? Like, this is the thing. Who knows how many pictures you took to start off with? You know, maybe it's 25, maybe it's 100. You then whittle those down to the top 5 or 6.
While feeling quite upset about how you look in all the rest of them.
Yes. Yeah. Or no, actually, I think just erasing that.
Yeah.
Just, you know, delete them. Never happened.
That's not me.
Those were just so... Why do we think we're like, they're so majorly unflattering, I couldn't possibly
look like that. It's not possible,
yeah. However, these are so flattering, but that's how I look. Mm. You know, like, you don't want to admit to yourself.
For me, it's the opposite. I get really stressed that actually I look only like the bad ones.
Well, there we go.
So when you see a good picture of yourself, I just feel like that's not actually what I look like. I feel that's fake.
We then play around with the lighting. You know, there are many myriad applications that you can use
FaceTune
on your phone
to take away that period spot that you've got on your chin.
Well, you know, or me. I mean, I really am very pedantic about a few things. I really don't like cigarette butts in my pictures or green wheelie bins. Like, I managed to remove those. Those are things I don't feel that they're, you know, having a big impact on a woman's who follows me, you know, body shape issues, but I am in some way making my life look prettier than it actually is.
But is that the only thing you edit out?
Pretty much, because I think it's really important that I look the way I look, and I have pores. One of my least favourite things about Instagram is the fact that people seem to have plastic skin. And I just...
Facetune.
Well, exactly. And you can see it a mile off. Like, I can see it a mile off anyway.
Well, so it's the Kardashian generation. Everybody wants to... It's either very good makeup or, yes, there's a lot of filters that go over it. But people have convinced themselves that
that is what you look like in a picture, it's impossible.
Exactly. And, you know, the level of filters that are being used, like I've interviewed some plastic surgeons for the book, and they were saying that people were coming into the surgeries and showing them a picture of their face with the Snapchat attractive filter, whatever you call it, and saying, can you make my face look like the way I look?
The better version of myself.
Yeah.
I mean, if that doesn't show you how sick our society is, what?
I mean, apparently before people used to come in and say, I need my chin done or my nose done, and now they say they want their face changed. And it's like, where do you go from that? Because they don't like anything about their appearance. They believe every single part of their face needs to be altered.
But this is the problem. When you spend your life looking at pictures of yourself...
Yeah, you can become very myopic, for sure.
You start being obsessive about little things that nobody would notice in real life.
So my,
because the camera, it's quite cruel, the camera, you know.
But it's not even just that. We now have thousands and thousands of scrollable pictures of ourselves on our phones all day, all night. You can, you know, scroll through these pictures. And because, as we mentioned before, we're deleting the bad ones, comparing ourselves to a version of ourselves that actually probably didn't entirely exist because it was you're only keeping the flattering shots, you know, and you are a mixture of the unflattering and flattering. You're somewhere in between.
Yeah, you've got good days, you've got bad days.
You've also got your brain and your heart and your soul.
Oh,
you
have, Monica, but you know, lovely.
It's true.
But you don't store your brain and your heart and your soul.
Well, hopefully you put it across a little bit in your captions too.
I wear my brain on my sleeve.
Yes, you do.
You know, obviously, this isn't all that matters, but...
No, but you're right.
It's very difficult because, you know, a picture speaks a thousand words. And more than anything, one of the ways that I believe that we can really change up the way you use social media is one of the big problems is it's the first thing you're encountering in the morning and the last thing you're encountering at night. And this is the moments in life, your rise time and your sleep time, when you are most vulnerable to... any kind of message, you know. And I speak to a lot of people that say that they look at social media before they go to bed and it starts to invade their dreams and they think about things, or they'll see something, their friends at a party that they weren't invited to, and they'll have anxiety feelings and then won't be able to sleep and wake up at 2 o'clock with like problematic insomnia. And, you know, there are so many moments of the day where you're much better able to deal with the barrage of information that social media offers. And I truly believe that first thing in the morning and last thing at night aren't those moments. So one of the big things I talk about in the book is making sure you don't have your phone in the bedroom ever. You know, anyone that is interested in self-care, buy an alarm clock. You know, you don't need your phone in there. There are a million reasons that you can like come up with why you need your phone in the room. Like, I've had many of them in the day. The alarm clock is one of them. When I had a baby, there was another thing that I was like updating when he woke up and when he went to sleep. So it's like, oh no, I need the phone in the room now so I can, you know, there's always going to be a reason. The real reason was that when I woke up in the middle of the night, I wanted to look at social media. You know?
And see if anybody's liked your picture while you're asleep.
To see if anyone's liked my picture when I was asleep, you know?
Guilty! Because,
you know, that is...
Yeah, guilty as well.
And do you know what? What if they did? Great. Are you going to go back to sleep really easy and have, like, really chilled dreams? Probably not going to make much of a difference. What if they haven't? Like, what do you open yourself up for then? A midnight sitting there worrying why people haven't liked you, you know, why you haven't got that validation, what you're lacking, why you're not enough.
Well, wouldn't you say we've all opened ourselves up to that constant?
I think we have, but, you know, there are ways to have social media in your life, understand that there are dangers that you are able to navigate in the same way as with anything, you know, with alcohol. Yes, we understand that alcohol presents potential dangers. If you have a glass of red wine with dinner every night, it's absolutely fine. If you like booze up on two bottles of vodka on a Thursday night, less fine, you know. There's a reason it's called a feed. You are what you eat, you know. When it comes to social media,
oh, that's interesting, I never thought it was
what called. You put in is what you get back out, you know. So if if you spend your time, and that the social media companies themselves delineate between two types of social media use, one being active, one being passive. And if you're active on social media and you are vulnerable and you form relationships with people based on something more than a pair of shoes, you talk about things, you're open and honest, you build actual communities around what you're doing, that is one type of social media use. The other type of social media use, where you don't put anything out there, you lurk, you creep, you stalk, you know everything about your ex's new girlfriend, you know everything about a girl at school who bullied you but still seems to be really successful even though she really doesn't deserve it because she's such an effing bitch. You know,
that's called the hate follow.
And these are two very different types of using social media, and thus they have two very different types of impacts on both our mental and physical health, you know. So really what this book is about is identifying a lot of the things we're all doing unthinkingly, and our attitudes that we've like developed and grown over the past 5-6 years, and just giving us a little bit of a wake-up call, but then saying, don't throw the baby out of the bathwater. So many of us, beyond just people that have a social media career, need social media for their careers these days. You know, just stopping using it isn't
practical. You've never thought of deleting your Instagram?
Never, because that would be like saying, oh, I'm gonna, you know, give him my notice tomorrow. You know, it's part of contemporary life. It's a media platform
and it's opened a huge amount of doors.
Exactly. So it would be like saying, I hate newspapers, or I hate books, or I hate the radio. Yeah. You know,
it's here to stay,
and it has democratized the fashion industry to a large extent.
It's not just democratized the fashion industry, it's changed cultural mores and you know, attitudes about all different things, you know. It's changed the face of power in terms of political and cultural power. The people's voices that we hear now are so more diverse. You know, it's things like miscarriage, for example, has completely changed the conversation around that. You know, you can't
about things like hashtag Me Too.
Exactly. Yeah, of course. And I mean, of course, there's the flip side of that from, you know, the collectivist element of like, how much are people actually politically engaged with quite a lot of social media politics? But, you know,
and the echo chamber.
Exactly, the echo chamber. But although I do feel in lots of ways, something like Instagram or YouTube, where you as the user have an active choice in who you go out and follow, I feel like Facebook, the algorithm is much more echo-like. But there's something about the fact that you have to put someone's name into that search bar to find them, to follow them. And that's another thing that I
talk about. It's starting to change. They're starting to put up sponsored content on there too now.
They are. And of course, this will all end up in the same place.
It's constantly morphing, isn't it?
Exactly.
This is the other thing about Instagram that I think people need to remember, whether you use it for your career or just as a way to sort of communicate with your friends, is that the algorithm is changing the whole time. Excellent. And you don't have control over that. So there's no point sort of getting upset if things change. It could just be that they've changed the way the feed is being presented to you.
And I think equally, one of the big, big takeaways that I hope people take from this book is remembering that it's very easy to think that social media platforms are this kind of like entertainment place or space for you to go out and share lovely pictures and blah, blah, blah. And obviously, that is one of its uses, but that's not how they make money. How they make money is by using your demographics and personal information and selling them to advertisers.
So can we get like a sort of bucket list of how to use Instagram or social media responsibly?
Okay, so number one, remember that it's only 1% of someone's life. It's just a snapshot. You have no idea what's going on in the background. And when my book came out, I started a campaign online called hashtags Why Social Media Is Ruining Your Life. And I posted a range of pictures, which originally had captions saying things probably as basic as like golden hour or, you know, short hair, no care. Oh, I mean, kill me. Like, the worst. The worst things. Anyway.
Neither of us has ever posted captions. Them.
Come on.
Come on. Okay.
Hey, maybe. I posted a picture with said fire sign 2 days ago. I feel bad now.
I posted golden hour like a week ago.
Yeah. So you know what? What can we say? We're all basic. What can we do? Anyway, it is what it is. So, you know, I reposted the pictures with... you know, pre-seed version of actually what was going on in my life at the time. And you know what? It was all pretty... I've had really difficult moments over the past 6 years. Crappy things have happened to me. Sad things have happened to me. And, you know, I just wanted to be honest about that. And
it was brilliant. Everyone should check it out.
Can you give us an example? Maybe we should read out one of the captions.
Oh, God. I mean, yeah. I mean, we could definitely do that. So one of the pictures... Here's the...
Let's read one, I think.
I guess... I don't want to say the funniest one, but I guess one of the more relatable ones was a picture that I had posted originally at New York Fashion Week. And, you know, it looks all snowy and I'm wearing like a big poofy skirt and, you know, standard Fashion Week, New York in the background situation. But the reality, in short, of what was going on was that my husband had just left me. I'd found out that thousands of pounds were no longer in my bank account and I was struggling to get my landlord to let me out of my lease. In addition to this, as a total rebound, I'd also had a fling with an American guy who'd persuaded me to come early to New York before Fashion Week to see him. On a crazy whim, I decided to go and book the hotel room, which he said he would pay for on my credit card. I had so much anticipation, had decided to use the money I did have left to get to wax, and left feeling like I was about to start the next stage of my romantic life. But then I arrived, and he stopped answering my messages. Oh, finally, at midnight, I got a text saying he couldn't actually make it as he had to go to a hockey match. A hockey match!
A hockey match!
I never heard from him again, and all I was left with was my Brazilian wax and the hotel room bill. Then I had to do Fashion Week, having not just been left by my husband, but also the rebound guy. It was brutal. Oh. But that was the picture I posted. You know, and yeah. That's the reality.
So a picture doesn't tell
you anything. It shows you a moment in someone's life and you have no idea whatsoever what's going on in the background. So if you're comparing yourself to other people on social media, you have to understand that it's not necessarily a fiction, but it's such a non-representative version of anyone's life. So I think, for example, if something isn't going very well in your life or you're feeling really hormonal or you've just had a crappy, crappy week at work, it's really important to learn to take your emotional temperature. And I think, like, a lot of my American girlfriends who are in therapy are really good at this. They're very self-aware of where they're at mentally, whereas I think here in the UK, we're not. We kind of just, like... ping pong ball through the day and then, you know, get home at night. Get home at night and you're like, oh, I'll just look at my phone. And you're already actually at 2 out of 10. So that is not the time to go onto social media.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be like seeing a barrage of lots and lots of positivity and happy messages and happy pictures of people doing really well on their life, because that's what social media is. And it's gonna make you feel like crap, you know? However, if you're having a really good day and you've woken up feeling fresh and you are ready to be inspired, then go onto social media. Mm. You should be going onto social media to be inspired, to learn, to explore and discover the world.
And meet people. I've made great friends on social media.
Exactly, exactly. So the third point of that is we hear a lot about unfollowing people that make you feel bad. And obviously that's a good idea. But ultimately, if you're not replacing those people with people that are expanding your horizons and making your life fuller and richer, then really all you're doing is taking away the people that you're jealous of. You know, that's what you're doing. What you need to do is completely reframe the context of your own social media experience by ensuring that the people that you follow are expanding your life rather than, you know, just that it's people that you already know, you know. And I think sometimes when you've spent 10 minutes scrolling on your phone, it's worth taking a moment saying, okay, what did I see that was new and interesting, and what did I learn from that 10 minutes of my life? And don't get me wrong, obviously it's nice to sometimes completely tune out and, you know, spend 10 minutes not thinking about anything and just, you know, zoning out of life. Of course, 10 minutes is fine. When you realize that it's been like 13 hours a week, which isn't unusual, you know, to have spent that kind of time on social media, you have to kind of think, okay, where am I going with this? What am I getting out of this? Yeah. 13 hours of zoning out of your real life, or else spiraling down of your real life, not good. Make sure you're just in a really, you know, good space when you go on it, and curate your experience to create the most positive reaction.
And you know what? I think Eva, who we interviewed in our last episode, would probably agree with you on all of that.
That's cool.
Eva Chen.
Yeah.
And I think to close this, I'd love to know who you stalk online, who inspires you, and who are your favourite accounts to follow.
Oh my God, I've got loads. So one of my favourites is F Your Beauty Standards. I love that account.
F Your Beauty Standards.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
And it's like all different, the most diverse beauty that you can imagine. And, you know, not just body shape, but skin and, you know, ethnicity, colours, creeds, shapes, everything.
Cool.
So I really check enjoy it out. Watching
That's
that.
Cool.
I think that there's an amazing girl called Lucy Sheridan. She is probably the first comparison coach, I think.
What's a comparison?
Her job is to coach people through struggles with comparison.
Oh my goodness, comparatitis. I feel that's my biggest... I have comparatitis. It's a sickness.
So she's an amazing, amazing account to follow. She had lots of personal issues, and she felt that she had become completely living her life through comparison to other people, but through addressing that, she's now moved on to form this career where she helps people, not just on social media, because comparison obviously didn't start on social media, but a lot of it is underlined by social media. So she's a great account.
Lucy Sheridan. We'll put these all in the show notes.
Yeah exactly.
So that you can go and
she's really great.
Look them up.
And then also, you know, I love following people who come from completely different communities to me, different backgrounds, especially finding out how they're raising their kids and, you know, how they're making their homes. And, you know, it's like, if I want to find out stuff from my friends and people like me, I can do that with WhatsApp or call them up. But I use social media to find like a completely different version. It's almost like, you know, fantasy lives, you know, because you could do things completely differently. So I'm like following mums in Denmark and in North Africa and like the American South, and just seeing all of these different types of experiences. And I love that. And with that, because I do have another account where I just cover being
baby
a mum.
Stuff.
Yeah, baby stuff. It's called Mama Loves Grey. And one of the accounts that I thought was amazing, and I actually interviewed Jessica Zook for the book, is I Had a Miscarriage. And it's an incredible account where she shares stories from around the world of all different types of women, just really undermining the taboo and having a conversation around it. So those, you know, those are some of the accounts that I like following, but it's... There's everything out there, every subculture, every interest, the whole world is on social media. Horses for every course. Go out there and find your people. Don't just think that it has to be the people that brands are working with, or the, you know, all of that stuff is out there for you.
Exactly. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Catherine.
And the book is available where?
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah, on that.
Everywhere.
On that really good place called Amazon too.
Perfect. And it's available as an audiobook.
It is. And I have...
For you podcast.
On Audible.
It's on Audible, and I recorded it. So it's my voice.
Bonus.
I have been told.
English accent.
But, it really helps people go to sleep. I'm not sure it's a compliment, but you know.
Yes, it is.
You know, at least it's calming. It's not going to stress you out listening to me.
Perfect. Well, Catherine, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Links to buy Catherine's book
are in the show notes.
And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe so as not to miss a single one of our episodes, since we're being such regular little podcasters nowadays.
See you next time.
See you next week.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.